This is the new home for Cheryl Fritz, 1320 WILS, the only Lansing radio station live in Lansing every morning, live in Lansing every afternoon. Welcome to Fritz and Friends with your host, Cheryl Fritz.
Welcome back to Fritz and Friends. Cheryl Fritz here, Scott Eckersley producing 1320 WILS and streaming live on 1320WILS.com. Going out on the phone now to our friend Nathan Triplett, East Lansing Council member. Good evening, Nathan. How are you?
I'm doing well, Cheryl. How are you?
I appreciate you stepping in tonight. Whenever I have questions about some of the subjects this evening, I know you're a man who can help me out with them. The census numbers were released this afternoon, came out yesterday and were released this afternoon. What is your overall take when you take a look? East Lansing up a bit, Lansing down. What do they mean to you?
Well, I'm very pleased with East Lansing's result. I think it's a testament to the attractiveness of our community and also to the great work of our complete count committee this past April, ensuring an accurate count. And clearly, it's an important result for the city of East Lansing moving forward.
And what was that complete count committee? I mean, a lot of us remember the folks knocking on our door. Were you behind the scenes or part of the folks out counting?
No, we were behind the scenes. Our complete count committee was a partnership of city staff, university staff, members of community organizations who had a stake in the result of the census, and we all came together to try and increase our participation rate and ensure that East Lansing had an accurate census count, and we were successful in that. Our participation rate is up several percentage points from the year 2000 and was actually more favorable than both the state rate and the national rate. So we're very pleased with that.
And what do these numbers mean? And you wear several different hats, Nathan. In your hat as East Lansing City Council member, do these numbers translate to dollars at some point, to assistance from the state? I mean, how do these translate for folks? What do they mean?
Absolutely. The census numbers are part of what's used for the formula that allocates constitutional revenue sharing. So an increase in our population means an increase in constitutional revenue sharing. We also estimate that about $1,500 per resident in federal benefits of one kind or another come back to the East Lansing community as a result of these census numbers. So for every individual that we count that we didn't have counted previously, 1,500 more federal dollars are coming into our community and supporting our residents and our activities here.
And when you see, and I know you're an information person, you love information, and when you saw in the census and hit the news today, the numbers on the city of Detroit down to the lowest since 1910, was that a surprise to you?
It was a larger drop than I thought it was going to be, but we all know that Detroit has been losing population for a long period of time. I should note that Mayor Bing has already come out in Detroit and said that they intend to try and challenge those numbers. You know, that's a huge blow to Detroit's budget, both in terms of what they get in their state allocations based on those numbers and also federal dollars. So for anyone who thinks that the census is just a headcount, it's far more than that, and it has real bottom-line dollars and cents impacts on Michigan communities.
Which is why when they came to the door, and if you weren't there, they would leave notes and call and call and call. They weren't trying to annoy us. They're trying to make sure we're there because, as you said, each person means dollars.
Absolutely, and not only dollars, but in the broader scheme of things, not just in an individual community, but population distribution is how political representation is apportioned. So these numbers will now be used by the legislature and by apportionment commissions in counties across the state to draw lines for Congress, for state legislature, for county commissions. So they have a political element to them as well that's very important to make sure that Michigan residents' voices are heard in the state capitol and the Congress in D.C.
And as I talked with Representative Mark Meadows just a few minutes ago, that redistricting is such an important piece of what happens now. That's like one of the next steps that we'll all be dealing with and hearing about and working on.
Right. And, I mean, people have to remember this census only happens every 10 years. So the maps that are drawn based on this census data will be the maps that are in place until 2020. So it has an immense impact on how politics plays out in the state of Michigan and in states across the country for the next decade.
And people always are concerned about when they hear about redistricting. There's just kind of like a pail that hangs over that with folks thinking, oh, you know, everybody's working on it and trying to gerrymander it and work it to the advantage. There's some new ways being tried this year. One including the public being involved with somebody who's a friend of yours, Jocelyn Benson, is working on a really interesting project.
That's right. Jocelyn Benson, who was a former candidate for Secretary of State and is a professor at the Wayne State University College of Law, is helping to direct a citizens' redistricting competition. So the same data that's available to members of the legislature and their redistricting committees has been made available to the public. And Jocelyn's working to have the public submit maps that will be evaluated based on the statutory criteria for redistricting. And then when the competition has concluded, the best map will be submitted to the legislature to be part of their deliberations as well. So we'll see whether or not the legislature pays attention to the map that's submitted, but I think it's really valuable for the public to be involved in this process because, as you know, it has tremendous impacts on how their voices are heard.
And I did have her on the show to talk about it, and I'm happy to remind. I think it's a fascinating way to look at it from a different angle, and like you said, give the citizens of Michigan an opportunity to be a part of the process. I think that's always a good thing. The other thing I wanted to discuss with you is the override the Senate concurrent resolution to override the Civil Service Commission granting benefits to same-sex partners. And again, as I talked to Senator Mark Meadows earlier, these are confusing times for folks politically trying to wade through all of this. Where are we on that, and do we need some more background information for folks, or does that kind of start us off?
Well, the Civil Service Commission decided to extend benefits to other eligible individuals that are related to state employees. So it's not limited just to same-sex partners, but to any unmarried adults that are that meet certain criteria and are living together and their dependents. Essentially what this is it's a constitutionally permissible form of domestic partner benefits, which the Michigan Supreme Court has said are not permissible if they only apply to same-sex couples. After Proposal 2. So the Commission made that decision. The Constitution allows the legislature, by a two-thirds majority vote of both chambers, to override a Civil Service Commission decision. It's never happened in the history of Michigan. This would be the first time. But the Senate has voted to do so, and now the measure is in the House, where Speaker Bulger and House Republicans attempted to get that two-thirds majority vote today. They were unsuccessful, so they cleared the board and have vowed to come back and try again. But, you know, for me, this is a measure that deals with fundamental fairness in how we treat our state employees. It's an issue of equal compensation for equal work. So I was gratified today to see that the legislature, the House specifically, was not able to pass this measure, which would essentially discriminate against a particular segment, specifically the LGBT segment of our state employee population.
And thank you so much for clarifying. I misspoke when I said same-sex partners. It is other eligible individuals. Thank you very much for clarifying that. I wouldn't want it out there that I had it wrong. Thank you for that, Nathan. Many of the folks who are not in favor of this say it's not a social issue, but say it's a cost issue. Do you buy that from them?
No, not for a moment. The cost argument is a complete red herring. If you just look at the data, even the largest estimates that have been compiled by the state employer, you're talking about a fraction of 1% of the state's general fund going to these benefits. And this isn't anything new. Several state universities, including Michigan State, offer these benefits. Ingham County offers these benefits. My city, East Lansing, will begin to offer them on July 1st of this year. And all of that experience shows us that the number of people who take advantage of these benefits is very small. But more importantly, again, the population that would be eligible for these benefits that are in opposite-sex relationships could get access to them even without this policy, simply by getting married. That's an option that's denied to same-sex couples. So the only people who would really lose out as a result of the legislature's action right now are same-sex couples. The concurrent resolution is about one thing and one thing only, and that's discriminating against LGBT families and their children.
Okay. When you said, and now the process is also interesting to me, when you said when the Senate couldn't get, and am I right, it was the House that could not get the votes, they cleared the board. What does that mean process-wise?
So the House held debate today, and at the conclusion of debate, they call for a vote, and voting is done electronically in the Michigan legislature. So up on the board, there's a display of everyone's name. Names turn green for folks who vote yes, red for folks who vote no. They stay yellow for folks who haven't voted. And so they put the vote up on the board, and people cast their vote, and it became apparent that the Speaker, Speaker Bulger, and the Republicans didn't have the necessary two-thirds majority to pass this measure. So a motion was made to clear the board, which means take everybody off of those electronic voting boards, and then another motion was made to pass the issue temporarily. So they tried and failed to get the necessary two-thirds majority, but it remains out there on the legislative calendar and could be brought up at any point in the future, though according to our Constitution, to override the Civil Service Commission's decision, they must act by the 18th of April. If they can't get the two-thirds by the 18th of April, the Civil Service Commission's decision stands. So I have no doubt they'll try again, but they were not successful today in the House.
And those two points, I'm glad you brought up, because they are important, that they have to have the two-thirds vote, and it has to be by April 18th. So, this one isn't over. We'll keep an eye on it. And, Nathan, thank you for keeping an eye on it as well and for helping us wade through some of these difficult issues with some great information.
You're very welcome, Cheryl. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. Nathan Triplett, East Lansing Council member, always has great information and presents it so well. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends after this.